Hello everyone, it's Andrew Duncan here. I'm over at Relatable HQ and I am joined today by Jenny Cheevers, one of Wellington's top mortgage advisors, and Khan May, owner of Relatable Real Estate as well. So, hi team.
Hi Andy.
Hey, Andrew.
So, we've been having a lot of conversations lately around unconditional offers, whether it's worth the effort, whether it's worth the investment, whether it's worth the emotional energy, and you feel like there's a lot of good knowledge that we could pass on to you. So we thought we'd put some of this info into a little podcast for you. So key takeaway here is we're going to help you find out if it's worth your time making your offer unconditional. Is it worth the effort? Jenny, you've actually gone away and done some stats based on offers that you've had over the last 6 months, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I went through and I looked at all the clients that I'd helped over the last 6 months make offers on property, and some of those were auctions, some were tender, some were deadlines or just by negotiation. And out of that I found some really interesting statistics. One of them was that 23% of the people that were unconditional got their houses. A staggering 45% missed out even though they were unconditional. Which I just find, I was really, really shocked about that. I couldn't believe how many people had gone to all the effort to make an unconditional offer and they still missed out.
Just shows you the way it comes down to price.
Well, it does, I think, yeah. Come down to price. I think that's that was the key takeout for me, is that although they put in all the effort, they actually weren't realistic about what they were actually offering. So yeah, that was a really big takeout for me.
What number of offers are people normally having to put in, do you find, before they're successful?
Generally I probably around two or three. It's rare that a client will get in a house that, you know, the first house that they've offered on.
And do you think that's because they're learning the market while they're doing those two or three offers, and they become more price accurate?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. They're just learning more about the price and, you know, where the market sits.
Do you think on that first offer sometimes people don't even, there's this fear, they don't even really want it. They're like, oh, just put my toe in the water, see what it's like to put an offer in. And then they sort of get blown out of the water and think, oh, okay. Now I've got it. Okay, this time I'm going to give it a good crack, you know. Yes. I think they realise how easy it is to offer, you know.
Yeah.
Fill out the sale and purchase, meet with the agent, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then they go, you know.
Yeah, well, I do think there is that nervousness, you know. We're all nervous about making kind of big decisions. Mm. And, you know, often when I sit down with clients after they've had an offer accepted and we're talking about their loan structure and that, they can be like, oh gosh, what have we done? And I'm like, look, everybody feels like that when they've had an offer accepted. It's that reality of, gosh, I've made the commitment,
Buyer's remorse,
you know. And I liken it to when we bought the house that we're in now. We'd looked for 18 months. I had done the numbers on the mortgage repayments, I don't know how many times, and still when our offer was accepted, I was going, oh gosh, can I afford the mortgage? Well, of course I could, but it's that, oh my goodness, we've finally made the commitment.
Yeah, but then you're in it and you realise, I remember buying my first house, and you get it, and you talk to first time buyers and they're just so scared about buying the house, and you just want to shake them and say, it's actually not that, but you'll find out your repayments are probably less than the bill and rent you're paying at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's just getting in. Yeah,
yeah, it is. I mean, I met with some clients yesterday and had a colleague that this person worked with owns a number of investment properties, and it actually said to my client, getting your first house is the hardest. Once you're in, you're in. You know, you're on the ladder and you're climbing up it. So,
the moral of the story might be, be prepared to miss out one or two times, maybe even three or four before you get that first offer accepted. Don't be too discouraged if it takes a few shots to get one over the line.
But I think too, you probably just need to be careful about how much money you're spending getting yourself to a unconditional position.
Absolutely.
If you're realistically nowhere near close to what the price might be.
Yeah.
Because then you've just actually wasted quite a bit of money.
That's a very good point. Yeah. That's a very good point. Have you got any tips, Khan, on how people, what they can do to find out if they, you know, to sort of try and ascertain if they are, if it is worth their trying to spend all that money and do all that research and get to an unconditional position?
Should you be getting to an unconditional position? I think in terms of, ask the agent, see how much information the agent's willing to give you.
Yeah.
If it's a situation where, like I had a friend recently, and a tender was brought forward, and he said he was getting a bit stressed. I don't even think he was in Wellington. He was looking at doing a builder's report and valuation. And
you're talking, over $1,000.
You're talking over $1,000.
Yeah.
To have a go. And he just called the agent and said, look, my budget's $850. That's as high as I wanted to go in this house. Am I wasting my time? And the agent was good enough to say, that's not going to buy the house right now.
Yeah.
And then flatlined it. So, and he appreciated it. He said, that's, and the stress went,
Absolutely. They might not always give you that answer, but you can certainly ask the question and
yeah,
try and find out what you can. I'd suggest that you should also look at comparable sales naturally. What's sold in the area nearby, and ask the agent, which ones are those the most comparable? Which sales are the agent using as comparisons? Spot on. You've got things like the homes estimate, the Trade Me Property Insights estimate. Those can be they're not always perfectly accurate.
No.
It's just bits of information that you can help pull together to create a picture.
They might give you a little bit of confidence.
A little confidence, exactly.
Your offer, maybe.
Yeah. Not the be-all and end-all.
You and I have seen that they're often not very accurate.
Yeah. So, partly try and find out whether you're going to be in the running, but also just be prepared that you might have to pay for a few valuations before you get your offer over the line. If you want to play the adult monopoly game, sometimes it does take a bit of investment to get through it. On that, just going back to those stats you had, Jenny. So, did you have a lot of people making conditional offers that were successful?
Yes, I did. About 18% made conditional offers, and they had their offers accepted. But interestingly, of those, half of them were apartments, where a lot of people do make conditional offers.
So you're kind of that's apartments. Kind of standard for that market.
So it's not kind of unexpected. One of them had just put on like a one-day finance clause, and then a couple of others were actually buying out of town. And I think that sometimes when people are buying out of Wellington, the market's different to, kind of what the Wellington market is. Yeah.
Is there an argument for making your first offer or two conditional, not spending the money as you learn the market, and then graduating to that position where you really know the market, you know what places are going for, and that's the time when you should, if you still haven't got a house, put the money into valuations and builders reports? Would you guys agree with that, or do you think get stuck in from the get-go? And
depends how much emotional energy you want to put into it, because I think it's emotionally exhausting for clients. I mean, I know the clients that have had pre-approved for a number of years, they offer on a few houses, get disillusioned, wait for, I don't know what they're waiting for, but they just, or take a break because they've just found it so, so mentally and emotionally exhausting. Mm. So I think there's that factor. That's often not everything in life is about money and dollars.
Yeah.
I think there's other things that kind of come into play.
The number of people that we talk to that we say, we call them to keep in touch, and you're still looking, I've just been taking a break, just been taking a few weeks off, so you can really attest to that. I know that the hardest thing about real estate for me is calling people back after they've missed out. It's the toughest thing about this job, and it's really hard, breaking someone's heart, telling them they haven't got the house they love. So not an easy thing. So totally agree. Emotionally exhausting.
That's right.
Yeah. Any other tips for people if they are making offers of how to make them more attractive, whether it's how they word any conditions they put in or how they word their pricing, anything else that you guys can suggest to common misconceptions or common mistakes maybe.
You get asked the question a lot, what should I do? Honestly, it usually comes back to the dollar figure at the end. Usually.
Yeah.
It comes back to the dollar figure at the end of the day. You can write a letter, you can put your photo on that letter, you can, and maybe if you're within a couple of thousand, that might make a difference, maybe. But at the end of the day, my experience shows that, and I'm not suggesting not to do it, you know, all sorts of bits and pieces about how you put your number down for your offer. Sometimes if you put an unconventional number, like an odd number, I guess it makes it look like you've put a lot more thought into the number, but it really does come down, you know, the condition, settlement date. Yeah, you can ask the owner what settlement date they would like. Try and have a settlement date that matches. If the house is empty, maybe a short settlement date is going to work, etc. Again, though, the dollar figures are usually going to trump that. I mean, a month on settlement might be a couple of thousand, few thousand, but a high dollar figure is normally going to get their attention.
Cool. I mean, I often say to people, you know, beware of what numbers might be an important point for an owner. So, for instance, you see a lot of people who they're looking at a house that's worth $700,000 and they offer $695,000, and you know you're basically potentially cutting yourself short. So if you make your offer $701,000 versus $698,000, the $701,000 looks 10 times more attractive to me. But sometimes people have a limitation on themselves where they don't want to go over that $700,000 mark. If you're offering $698,000, you might as well offer $701,000. It's not that much of a difference. It's going to make your offer look a whole lot more attractive to me. So that's another common one I see is people offering just under a round figure. I think you're probably better off just having the
I was just thinking that is it's that number at the front.
Yeah.
It's the number at the front, isn't
that's
it?
A really good
what
way to
you
put it,
want
yeah.
to see. And your eyes are always gonna be drawn to that first number. So it wouldn't even matter if you put, say, 699,900 because you liked all the nines or something. They're still gonna look at that number at the front, you know. So
still gonna have a six in front of it.
Or seven, yeah. So absolutely. it's just the way our minds work, I think. Yeah.
Jenny, if people are offering subject to finance or if they are offering subject to evaluation because they need one, what's a reasonable amount of time? What do you normally recommend they put down in terms of time frame?
It depends how well organised I've got them already. But obviously there's limitations. If there's evaluation, it's about the valuer having time to go around and things like that. So I suppose you could say 5 working days. But if they didn't need evaluation, that's why sometimes if the client is, and I've been able to get the client very well prepared, I'll say just put on a 1 day clause. And that's normally because it's just a deadline has been brought quite quickly forward and we're trying to turn things around so quickly that we just haven't got the capacity to do that. But you kind of know everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
So that's how I'd look at it.
And worth having someone on your corner in that case, like a mortgage broker who you can ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Advice from. Yeah. It, definitely, I think. And just knowing that you can get hold of somebody. I had somebody call me today and said, oh, I rang the bank 6 months ago and they said that I'd be fine, but now I want to do this. I can't get hold of anybody, you know. Nobody's so there to talk to me. Yeah. So, hence, they rung up me and I'm still here. So, yeah.
I often meet people who are putting in offers. Usually, it's people who are doing it for the first time or they're fairly new to the process and they're putting in subject to 10 working days for a title search or 15 working days for a finance clause. And the problem is those things can basically take you out of the running with a lot of houses. You know, most of the houses we sell, the buyers are either unconditional or they're maybe 5 working days max for their finance clause. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. As soon as you see a lot of people put down an offer and you see 10 working days for finance or immediately will normally right go back to them and say, geez, if you can, you need to shorten that 10-week notice or a builder's report. If you're an owner looking at that, you're going to think, geez, that's too long to wait to find out whether my house is unconditional. So you've got to shorten that as much as you can.
Yeah, I think as a buyer, you've got to keep in mind, you've got to protect yourself, absolutely, but keep in mind that if you're making an offer subject to 10 working days for a condition, you're asking the owner to take the house off the market for 2 weeks, which, as Karen's saying, is a really long time to wait to find out if that deal is going to go through. That's a lot. That's two open homes. That's 2 weeks of marketing. That's potentially a lot of other buyers that they have to turn away while they're waiting to hear what the final answer is. So,
yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right, guys. I think that's a pretty good coverage of that topic. Anything else either of you would like to add or put in there as advice for people who are tossing up whether to pay for that valuation, which they know is going to cost them a whole lot of money, but it might help them get the house?
It is worth getting yourself in an unconditional position.
Absolutely.
There are too many circumstances I've seen where, yeah, like one recently sold this little place. There were three offers, all within $5,000 of each other.
Yeah.
The lowest of the three got it. The other two had conditions, not onerous, yeah, but they had conditions.
As an owner, you're going to take the sure thing, aren't you?
And as an owner, all three offers were acceptable to the owner. Yeah. So they went back to the unconditional one. And the one unconditional one out of the three got it. I mean, Jenny, you're right in the fact that if you've got to be serious about getting into it to go unconditional. There's no point going unconditional if you're
going to put on a cheeky offer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
But if, yeah, but if you're going to put a cheeky, yeah. Unless you're going to put in so cheeky that you don't worry about doing any conditions because, you know, if I get it, that's amazing. You know,
it's all right.
I'll take a punt. But if you are serious on price, if you're in the right ballpark, that being unconditional can give you that final little push you need just to increase your chances of winning that bid or winning that process, particularly if there are one or two other people that you think might be offering on it as well. So maybe you can judge it on how busy you think the house is. Is there part of it that would you say to buyers, look, if there's 30 other people at the open home, you're probably going to need to be unconditional to win it? Or would you say that's a bad guide as to how hard they have to push? If the place has been on the market for 3 months, maybe they don't need to worry so much.
It's hard, isn't it? Because if there's, I don't know, how would you feel if there were 30, if you were a buyer and there was a lot of interest in the property?
Yeah.
And I think your initial reaction would be, oh God, I don't want to spend the money going unconditional because what are my chances of getting this?
Yeah.
Quite low, yeah?
Yeah.
Theoretically, you actually probably need to be unconditional too.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, eh? I ran the stats on it a little while back. We usually find around a third to a half of the offers we receive are unconditional. Of all the properties we market, it's usually about the ratio. So, and obviously weighted more to the more popular properties, it'd be fair to say. You're more likely to attract unconditional people. So,
yeah, exactly.
But one thing too, though, and I always say this to Mike, don't be put off by how many people go to an open home.
No, same, yeah.
Because you never know how many people are genuinely interested.
Yeah.
And there are some people that like to go to open homes, even if they're not looking at buying. So, I mean, I think, never be put off by that. I mean, if you see the house that you want, you just have to go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I see new clients to get them pre-approved when they leave, I always say, you know, the hardest thing will be finding a house, and they just laugh at me, but it's true.
Yeah.
The hardest thing is finding the house that you want. So when you do, I think you've just got to go for it.
Yeah, don't overthink it. Just get stuck in.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Jenny, obviously we're big fans of using a mortgage broker. I think it's helpful to have someone on your side who can you can go to for advice and who can speed the process up for you. How do people find out more about you if they're interested? And in your words, what would you say are the benefits of using a mortgage broker?
So, the easiest way to get hold of me, give me a call, 027-244-6686, or go through my website, which is www.jennycheevers.co.nz. If But I'm sure, Andrew, you'll put all the links on this podcast to get hold of me, or just Google me, actually. The amount of people that have said, how'd you get my name? And they're just like, oh, I just put you into Google. So just put in Jenny Cheever's Google, and I'm pretty sure safe things will come up. although you might see a few running results and a few cycling results. But, yeah, generally it's all about mortgage brokering. But I think the key thing with me is the ethics that I run my business by, and that is care, skill and diligence with my clients. So, yeah. Thanks, Andy.
My pleasure. Khan, we over at Relatable, obviously we love helping people buy houses and we love helping people sell. How do they get in touch with you if they want to find out more about either?
You can email us at hq@relatable.co.nz. That's probably the best one to get us on. That'll come through to either Andy or myself. Feel free to give us a call on 0219313381. Always happy to chat. Look forward to hearing from you.
Fantastic. We've also got a quote request option on our website. So relatable.co.nz. If you are thinking of selling and you'd just like a rundown of costs and things like that, you can jump on there and order one of those anytime. There's no obligation to it at all. So thanks everyone for listening in. Appreciate all your time. And thanks Jenny and thanks Karen for joining us.
Thanks Andy.
Pleasure.